Welcome, everyone, to your Rainmaker Roundtable call. And I want to ask you a question to start out with. How much time, money, and energy are each of us losing by not tracking our marketing efforts? Today, we're going to be working on asset number 17, which is your tracking system. And in let me just as a reminder and put it into context for everyone. In Rainmakers, our marketing assets are ideas, tools, concepts, or activities that provide the greatest leveraged return on your marketing time, money, and resources. I'll say that again. We're working on marketing assets and habit. Today, we're working on asset number 17. And a marketing asset, just like in your financial life when you're building wealth, it builds marketing wealth. And it's an idea, a tool, a concept, or an activity that provides the greatest leverage return on your marketing time, money, and resources. So to acquire this asset and get this into your portfolio, you will want to have a tracking system in place, similar to what we're going to talk about on this recording, and then to make sure that you're using it on a regular basis. So before we get going, let me introduce and make sure you all know who else is here. Sean McNallis, who's everyone knows is a co-founder of Atticus and one of the top coaches in the country. Sean, hello.
Hi there, everyone.
So, you've all heard it said that it's difficult to manage what you can't measure. Business people say it, MBAs say it, top-level executives say it, and some enlightened attorneys say it. And we say it all the time because we believe this is one of the cliches that's worth repeating. If you don't track certain key measurements, you really don't understand, or it's really hard to tell what's working and what's not working in your client development efforts. You may have a general feeling about it, about whether a certain tactic or strategy is being successful, but you won't be able to fine-tune that marketing effort without taking measurements. You won't know if any of the innovations you're making in your marketing approaches are working, or if it's having the effect on the results that you want. So again, we're not talking about any complicated statistical analysis here. The measurements we want you to pay attention to are really not that difficult at all. And the truth be told, I know that very few of you on this call became a lawyer because you were great mathematicians. So we're not going to be doing any complicated calculations. Simply counting and a little long division is all that's going to be needed, because measuring the effectiveness of our marketing efforts is all about percentages.
So let's talk about how to gather the data to help you determine the percentages. To obtain the numbers we're talking about, you have to have someone in your office tracking these eight key indicators. And what most of our clients tend to do is one of several different ways. They take a handmade chart, or they print out the chart like the one that we're giving you online. They print it out, they make a little modifications in it, and they use it that way. Or they make a new Excel spreadsheet, and they put that on a clipboard, and they put that on the receptionist's desk. Or they generate a report from their contact management software. Though some of you don't have contact management software, you may have practice management software, which may or may not be able to print out useful reports of this kind. In any case, no matter what level of technology you're at and what level finish you want to put on this report, you can use something very basic and get what it is that you're after. Now, we talk a lot about the receptionist in gathering the key statistics, because generally the receptionist is going to be the person that gets those incoming calls from potential clients or fields other calls that are worth noting.
Sean, so, can I just add something?
Sure.
There too? It's also a great time to think about, I don't want you as the attorney being focused on having to pull all this together, sort of like I don't want you being focused on pulling your financial information together. That's what you use a bookkeeper for. And this is what I would use my marketing assistant for, too, to work with the front desk, the reception, or to work with you or the other attorneys to collect this data and help you put it together. Sorry, Sean.
That's okay. It's a good point, worth mentioning. And if you have a marketing assistant, definitely delegate as much as you can of this to this person, because they're usually, it's part of their job description usually to gather this kind of marketing data. And of course, whoever's working on this is going to have to work hand in hand with the front desk person, who is typically in the best position to capture some of this initial data. So hopefully most of you have been able to download the sample spreadsheet and been able to take a look at it. We have one on the online, and we can email one to you if you absolutely can't get it off of our website.
Is this what Chris Lee sent us yesterday?
She did.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks.
Good. So this sample is set up to capture a month's worth of information, and it contains areas at the very top of the spreadsheet, such as the total number of inquiry calls. And all that means is the total number of people that called to inquire. This is not the number of people that hired. This is the number that inquired. Then we're going to want to capture the total number of new clients and the total number of marketing activities. This is just some of the totals that we want to capture. Down below, the heading up the columns, reading left to right, there's spaces to capture the date of the potential client's call, the potential client's name, where the client originated, and here we have a couple of abbreviations. WP stands for Yellow Pages, AD stands for Advertising, RS stands for Referral Source, and CL stands for Client. These are four major categories that you're likely to get your clients from. If you don't know the name of the referral source, you don't have to write it right away, but if it's known and the receptionist can capture that, she can write that name down here as well. And then in the next column, whether or not the client is qualified is listed. Now, this is something that the attorney will have to help determine, unless it's really clear the caller is price shopping. As mentioned before, the Yellow Pages does not always attract the very best client. They're known for attracting a lot of price shoppers. So if you're getting price shoppers, you need to capture that information and where those price shoppers are coming from. Next to this is a place to record whether or not the person signed up for a consultation, and this is followed by a column to capture whether or not the potential client became a paying client.
You know, and this form can also be used, and by the way, Sean, I would add, we want them, once you've printed this out in your Quick Start manual, I would put this under asset number 17. So you have a form that's in there now. It's Rainmaker 17.01. Go ahead and include this in there as well as a substitute tracking form. But this form can be used as is, the way we've given it to you. You can modify it and include additional items. Some rainmakers add a column entitled things like a thank you note was sent out to people, and then we check off whether we've sent that thank you out or not to the referral source.
I got in here late just now, and I missed the description of what YP, AD, RS, and CL are.
Okay, YP is Yellow Pages. AD stands for advertising, so other forms of advertising. RS stands for referral source. And CL stands for client, so it's a client referral.
Great, thank you.
You can modify these forms so that it works for you, but we're trying to give you a tool that someone, your front desk, and your marketing assistant can use with you so we can get monthly tracking going. And what we want to do is that you can modify these columns, and one of the things we said, you can modify it to add a, whether a thank you note or a gift was sent out. Other people modify it to see if fee agreements were sent or retainer received for those of you that have retainers to help you track those sort of things. The other thing some people will add, not so much for the upfront, but later on when the client conversion happens, what's the value or the expected value of the client? Or is it an A, B, or C, or D client that was converted? All of this is really great information for the long haul. And one of the things I would highly recommend is getting, if it is a referral, the name of the person, because what we're trying to do over time is put together our top 20 list. And it was really good to find out really how many referrals our client, our top 20, is sending.
I think it's really important that one of the columns to add to this is to track that you have declined the client if you're declining them, because that's one of the biggest sources of malpractice claims, or people saying, oh, I spoke to someone, I thought they were handling my case, and now my statute expired, or something like that.
I think that's a great idea, and you can have a column entitled Declination Letter Sent.
Right. We
and
just,
they can
we call
check
it no thank you. We call it a no thank you letter. But,
yeah, perfect.
But whatever you call it, you should track that.
Yeah, it shows that the record is, you know, the record shows that happened and we declined it. Those sort of things are great. And the only other thing is we do want you to keep this simple and not get it too complicated. So as we modify this, you might create another tracking form, but try to keep it simple so you can analyze the data fairly quickly. Sean, can you elaborate a little bit more on the form?
Yeah, well, once you get your form established, this form is really useless unless it's reviewed on a regular basis. We want either the marketing assistant and the attorney, or the attorney and his or her partners, or the attorney alone to look at this form at least several times during the month to track the progress. Because once the data from a number of months has been captured, the firm will really have an invaluable record of these 8 key indicators that Mark is going to go through here in a minute. And it's really a good tool to help them decide how to proceed with their marketing efforts.
So now that you, well, let me check. Is there any questions about the basic mechanism of this form and this tracking tool and how you use it? Does anyone have any basic questions on it before we move forward with it?
Just an aside, what we do is, even if you're not taking that client, unless it's a true crazy client that you're not taking for that reason, you know, if it's just something we can't handle or something that didn't make sense, that there wasn't really a case, they go in our computer-generated database and they get all of our emails and all of our mailings if we send anything out. And we picked up a ton of clients. As a matter of fact, 1 7-figure case just from sending someone a letter after the fact on a quarterly newsletter type of basis, where we didn't take the case but still kept them on the mailing list, and they appreciated that. And when someone, it was actually somebody who balcony broke, and they were paralyzed, and they called us because they had one of our magnets on their fridge that came from a mailing.
That's a great point, because marketing is a numbers game, and the more people we can communicate with, you just never know when it's there. And so what he's played into is the TOMA, the top of mind awareness. Now, when he declined that case earlier, that client, they may have gone to somebody else and done business. So it's just another reminder of capturing those people into our database. So we said that there are 8 statistics that will help maximize your marketing efforts and track this. And the first one, and you might write this down, the first one is the total number of marketing activities completed on a monthly basis. Now, you may complete this for yourself and or your partners, and you may bring it together for a total at some point. I recommend tracking your individual attorney, because that's the highest level of marketing contact. If you have your staff doing it, it's great to count theirs as well, but yours predominantly we want to capture. So the math is very simple here. It's really how many marketing events of a true referral marketing nature, high-quality nature, did we do? And obviously, the more marketing contacts we do, the more referrals we're going to get, because it is a numbers game. And we stand on a recommendation that 3 marketing contacts a week is the minimum that we need to maintain a substantive word-of-mouth marketing program. So if you think about it, that equals 150 marketing contacts a week. I mean, excuse me, a year. So when we see this number drop, we can usually expect somewhere in the pipeline we're going to see a drop in the number of new clients.
The second percentage that we want to track, or key indicator that we want to track, is what percentage of your new clients are referred by past and present clients. This particular statistic shows a couple of things. For one, it shows how closely related your customer service is to marketing. In fact, you've probably heard us say this before, we believe delivering a high level of customer service is marketing. And if you want to know how your clients feel about the service they receive from you and your firm, you want to look at this particular spreadsheet to determine the number of referrals that they send. You compare this number with the overall number of referrals that you are sent, and you see what percentage of your referrals come from your clients. And with few exceptions, for most practice areas, having past and present clients refer new business means one thing, that they were really very satisfied with the level of care they were given. And they showed this approval by telling other people about you and your practice. We worked recently with an attorney in South Carolina who, they survey their clients religiously. They do not just exit surveys. They check with their clients mid-case also, and really do a very good job, gracefully insert these surveys into the process, really do a good job of assessing their level of client satisfaction. And their client satisfaction level ranks in the high 90s, which is very unusual. They really put a strong focus on customer service. And consequently, they receive a really huge number of client referrals. So what's a huge number of client referrals for your practice area? If you're somebody like Scott Handler, who's on this call, who does asbestos, it's going to be a low number because even some of his clients are not going to know that many people that would be candidates for his practice. So in his case, past client referrals are going to be a lower percentage. But if you're somebody like an estate planning attorney who should expect to get 25 to 30% of your referrals from clients, then that's the kind of number you should be shooting for, even 50% if it's possible.
So even when we're looking at a traditional PI practice, though, or a litigation practice, we're looking at 35% as a decent mark that we're doing okay. Correct,
yes.
John?
Yes, and of course, the higher the better. And, you know, when we hear of a firm that exceeds, you know, 25, 35%, we know that they're probably really delivering very good client service. And if they're smart, they're really pairing this focus on client service with one of our other highly effective habits, and that's asking for referrals. There's a couple of you on this call right now that do a really good job of this. And what you know is when attorneys mention to clients that your firm is built on referrals and you're available to help, if any of the client's friends or family could use your services, the number of your referrals usually picks up. But you have to have a client service focus first. If this statement, if this request of your clients is to be effective. So if you want to fine-tune your marketing, really without even leaving your office, focus on great client service. It's really a good place to start, and you might be leaving a lot of referrals on the table by not really delighting your clients at every turn.
You know, we do a lot of firm retreats, and one of the things that we look for is the percentage of number one, the percentage of clients coming from referrals, but also the number coming from referrals from clients. And that's always when you're looking at your annual retreats and your annual goals, is setting a goal for you and the team to up that number, because it gets the whole culture of the firm focused on top-of-mind awareness, client service, staying connected to the client. If it's very low, it gives us something to work on, and if it's high, it gives us something to shoot for to take it to another level. So it's another good reason to track that percentage. The third stat you want to write down is what percentage of your clients come from Yellow Pages and or advertising, and how many are price shopping. Now, not everyone on this call uses the Yellow Pages, and quite frankly, the Yellow Pages are losing their significance in most markets. But from Yellow Pages and advertising, how much business are you getting from there, and how many clients are actually price shopping? So for some of you, this advertising budget or the Yellow Page budget is one of your highest client development expenses. And it's going to be really important to know if it's paying off or not. So here's how you can tell. Track the number of clients that come from that form of advertising, and most of you it will be Yellow Pages. And by the way, what we're seeing is more and more also is Internet inquiries, and we want to have that as a category. And we can ask questions of the client when they do inquire. Whom may we thank for sending you to our office? May I ask how you found us? Those are simple questions, and then making sure we mark it down on the tracking form. If the caller is overly intent about finding out about certain things, if you're an hourly practice, about pricing, if your firm is not and they're asking some difficult sort of customer service stuff, and they appear like they're really not interested in scheduling an appointment, or upon hearing when the appointment is, or if you're hourly, the fee, and you have a consultation fee for it, the caller is, you'll start to notice whether the caller is qualified or not, or just price shopping. So, and we know that a lot of our advertising are notorious for bringing in a great deal of price shoppers. But once in a while, they land a substantial client. So to figure out whether or not the ad is working or the phone book is working, look at how much your phone book originated clients bring in fees, what they bring in fees on a monthly basis, compared to what you spend on that advertising. And you'll want to do this calculation for some of you, depending on your practice area, every quarter. And some of you, you're going to have to do it every 6 months and then annually, just to keep a handle on this, because we find that a lot of our rainmakers have a very subjective approach to this. They'll remember the last time they got a good client in, and they'll remember it came from the rainmakers. They'll remember it came from the Yellow Pages, and they'll say the Yellow Pages is working. But when they look at the stats, when they look at the instrument panel, they find out, you know what, it's not working quite as effectively as they thought it was. And again, we believe that's going down. The effectiveness is going down and down and down for most markets. So if you find that these fees from the advertising or the phone book clients is less than what you're spending, and it's not adding up on the long haul, ideally, fees should obviously not exceed these expenses, and we got to make a change.
The next key indicator to take a look at is what percentage of your potential clients who call your office inquiring about your services are what we call qualified or desirable clients. And as most of you on the call already know, clients are qualified if they're able and willing to pay and meet all the rest of your client's selection criteria, which is going to be different for each of you and each of your different practice areas. And the reason you want to see what percent of your callers, your inquirers are qualified is because it tells you about the quality of your referral sources in advertising. You can take a look at, if 8 out of every 10 callers to your office is really unqualified, you want to trace those backwards to find out where those clients are coming from. Now, in some PI firms, they live with this kind of a standard. They understand that the way that they're advertising, they're going to pull in a lot of unqualified clients, and they decide that that's okay. For other firms, however, it's probably not okay. If you're in an estate planning firm and 8 out of 10 callers are inquiring but are not qualified to use your services, then you want to trace it back and see what the source of those inquirers is, and decide whether or not that's going to be a source you want to invest in the future.
Good. And the fifth statistic to track is what percentage of your clients are coming from referrals in general. We talked about identifying referrals as past and present clients, but referrals in general. So out of everyone who dials your office to inquire about your services, how many come from a referral source as opposed to some other form, Yellow Pages, those sort of things? It's generally accepted that clients are referred by people who know you, trust you, have confidence in you, and can heartily recommend your services. And we know that these people are usually easier to work with. They're usually better, higher-value clients and cases. So one way you might be able to find this out is if you do track your other form, Yellow Pages, those sort of things, subtract the number of, so if you're very good at tracking the Yellow Pages, track the number of people that came in for the year, subtract the number that you got from Yellow Pages, and that basically gives you your referral number. I'll say that again if it's not making, I don't know if it's clear, but some of you haven't been tracking referrals very well, but you've been tracking your other forms like Yellow Pages. So we could total the number of clients we received, new clients we received last year, subtract the number we got from Yellow Pages, and that usually will give you your referral number for the most part. It's a rough guess, but as we track it, we'll get better. So if, let's, for example, if you were hired by 100 clients as a rough number last year and 25% came from Yellow Pages or other forms of advertisement, 75% of your clients came from referral sources. So typically the higher this number, the higher number that we have from referrals, the less stress you're going to be. And as I mentioned before, referred clients are generally more desirable. If this number is too low for you, ramp up your marketing efforts. So if the number that you're getting in from referral sources is too low, we want you to ramp up the marketing efforts and focus more on FaceTime with your referrals and your client referrals.
The next key indicator we want to talk about is what percentage of the qualified clients who call you actually make an appointment to talk to you or another attorney. If, let's say, 8 out of the 10 qualified potential clients who called you this month to set up an appointment don't end up booking an appointment, something is wrong with your inquiry call script. Whether or not you're handling the conversation or someone else in your office is handling it, somebody is turning off potential clients by saying the wrong thing. Because again, these are qualified clients, and if you find a high number of qualified clients are not converting to sign up for a consultation, then something is wrong with the intake script. And problems in this area happen more often than you would imagine. So you want to really focus on this, because if you're going to spend the time, the money, and the effort to get clients to pick up the phone and call you in the first place, you don't want the system to break down at this point. All of your marketing would have been for naught. So you want to analyze your scripts, record yourself if you need to, have somebody take notes, figure out what's off here, because it's really a delicate art to converting someone who's interested in being a client to an actual client. And any breakdowns in this area are very much worth investigating.
Go ahead, Sean.
The next piece concerns what percentage of those clients who schedule a consultation actually become paying clients. And this is sort of the end of the road. This is the final step in the journey that a potential client takes in the course of becoming one of your clients. And we believe if you're not converting at least 75% of, again, qualified clients who come in for an initial consultation, something is wrong. So if you don't know what you're doing wrong, have someone sit in on a consultation and evaluate your performance. Sometimes the problem lies with the way in which the attorney explains how they can help. Sometimes the attorney doesn't spend enough time listening to the client's story, and the person leaves feeling unheard. Sometimes the attorney lacks the ability or doesn't devote enough time to building a sense of rapport with a potential client. Again, another delicate art here. A lot of elements go into a successful consultation, and any number of them could be off. So if this statistic is low, if the number of people who come in for a consultation but don't convert to becoming clients is low for you or somebody else in your firm, you really want to get help in this area. You want somebody to mentor you on this, or you want to mentor that other person in your firm for whom the statistic is low.
Where do you get that percentage of? Like, is that just, what is that based on? Why that number, for example?
That's really based on what clients tell us. The most successful clients are usually converting at least 75% of the qualified clients. Qualified.
Right.
And that means someone's not doing a very good job of screening, and you're sort of like this open door policy to take appointments with everyone, then that number will be lower because they're not truly qualified. They let a lot of people in the door and they're not qualifying them. Does that
make
sense?
It's funny. The thing of determining the qualified client is very, very interesting to me. We had somebody come in the other day who I spoke to them when they first called. They found us on the internet, and they bragged about what great businessmen they were. And then they wanted a flat fee for us to obtain a permit. And Delight, my associate, followed up on it afterwards. It turns out that they were price shopping. But I don't know how we would have known that. You know, when I spoke to them on the phone, they seemed qualified in that they understood. They were very familiar with using lawyers. When they came in, they said, "Why? You know, I'm used to matters in which I pay lawyers $40,000-$50,000 a month." So I didn't hesitate in saying that to get them this particular kind of permit, it could be relatively easy. It could be complicated. So I couldn't quote them a flat fee. And then when we called back, us we didn't hear further from them with some of the information we needed to draw up a proposal. They said, "Oh, well, we've spoken to some other attorneys now, and they've given us flat fees, and so you have to do that." So I don't know whether to consider that we just, you know, bad judgment. We thought they were qualified, and if they're price shopping, you know, I don't know if that makes them automatically unqualified, and, you know,
Sounds like they were pretty sophisticated price shoppers, you know, because normally price shoppers will reveal themselves fairly early in the process. But
they didn't do that. They said they made it sound as if they were looking for quality.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they started to blanch at our fees, which we've just raised, mm-hmm. thanks to the confidence that Atticus gives us in what we're doing, they seemed to blanch a little bit. And seeing that quickly, I added, well, you know, we can't work for everybody. And went through the whole whole, you know, speech, and thought we had reeled them in, and I don't know. So
I'd say they were more sophisticated than your average bear, from the sound of it.
And it didn't sound like they weren't qualified. I'm curious, were they actually? Did they actually make it into the office to speak to
yes.
you?
Yes. Oh, yeah, they did. They came to the office, and they again continued to tell us how many successful small businesses they had set up, and they had an ambulette business with about 30 ambulettes, and they were gotten to know a bunch of hospitals in the New York metro area well. So they said, you know, we think the medical waste business has been badly underserved, and that we could bring a level of sophistication, and we have good relationships with hospitals. And then they wanted to know how many medical waste permits had we helped anybody get, and I said, you know, frankly, we know the medical waste system because it's not much different from the hazardous waste system in terms of the tracking of the waste. But I said, we haven't helped anybody get a permit. I said, and I'd be really surprised if you found a lawyer who's done more than one of these. And they said, well, there are only six of them in the state. So in any event, that was a thing where they at first seemed kind of disappointed that we didn't specialize in it. And I said, you wouldn't want a lawyer who specializes in getting medical waste permits.
Well, and for me, there are a couple of things about that. They may not have, sometimes you don't know until you dig in a little deeper. The thing we always refer, that we always suggest, which it sounds like you were doing a fairly good job of, is making sure that we stay in control during the consultation and
right.
that we demonstrate the exclusivity and the control. What they may have been looking for, and we're seeing more and more of this when you're looking at some types of litigation or even hourly practices, more and more business people are asking for value pricing. And this is going to become more and more interesting subject. We just did a whole workshop on this and had Ron Baker, who's the author of Value Pricing, sort of the guru on it. And it's going to be another level that if we're not prepared to be able to deal in that realm, we may lose the business. But we don't know. What you're really doing now, which is great, is an autopsy. If we haven't been able to land the client, what worked, what didn't work.
Right.
And so what you're sort of looking at is the autopsy. Is the client complete, or did they choose another lawyer yet?
No, because Delight, my associate, talked to them yesterday, and I'm going to get back to them. And I raised this, I hope I'm not taking too much time, but I raised this because, you know, I'm not really sure whether they have now become disqualified or unqualified in the sense that now that they're price shopping. So I'm not even sure whether I should pursue it or whether pick a number, you know, and make sure I'm comfortable that, you know, I'm more likely than not that the service will fit within that dollar figure, or just say, you know what, I'm not going to try to compete on price. They could find people cheaper than me, and it's not worth it. So I guess I'm not really sure.
Well, let me just say that price shopping doesn't disqualify people immediately.
Okay.
But we've got to be able to take control and show them that price is not the issue. And
right.
If after we do that, they continue to choose on, they're choosing on price, low, they're getting the low bidder out there, and it doesn't, we can't serve them for those fees, those prices, there's no problem. That was not destined to be your client. They're not in your A or B or probably even in your C basis.
Right. Okay.
You keep using the term qualified client. I don't know what you mean by that.
What is a qualified client? One of the things that we work with, Adam, is the A, B, C, and D level clients. And one of the assets has us distinguish for each of our practice areas what really is the best type of client that we can work with, we can serve, we can help. Because we're clear that as rainmakers, we cannot work with everyone and we shouldn't work with everyone because we end up filling up our pipeline, if you will, our work process with a lot of C and D level clients that often need more, if not just as much attention as our A and B level clients. So we start distinguishing what is our ideal client, an A or B, and sometimes a C level client, and what makes them qualified. And then we start to recognize them as early as we can in the process. So during the intake, if we have somebody just asking price, 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 they probably aren't his type of client, because he's built on relationship, and not that price isn't important, but if that's all they're looking at, they're more than likely, history has shown, they're more than likely to turn out to be a poor client. So there's one other percentage that I'm going to recommend that you capture, and that's the average value of a client. So we want to look at, of all of our business in a particular grouping, a particular practice area, or a particular sub-grouping of practice area, what's the average value of the case? Because over time, one of the things we want to do is raise the average value per case. And we can do that by being more selective, more exclusive, and we can do that by continuing our marketing efforts. So if we never stop marketing and we're always doing these, a minimum of 3 marketing contacts, it will give us the freedom to be more selective and to choke what we've called choking the front end of the pipeline by either raising the value of the client, the criteria of the client we would take, or if you're a billable practice, your retainer, your hourly. What should happen over time, instead of raising your revenues based on just volume, we will raise it on average dollar per case. So we want to track that over time to see that that's going up. So,
I want to mention that to officially acquire this asset called tracking, you want to print out our tracking form or use one of your own that will capture the equivalent information. You want to have it modified specifically to reflect what you want to capture. It should capture at least these 8 indicators that we've just talked about. And you want to then set up the appropriate people to gather that data. It might be the receptionist and the marketing assistant, or if you don't have a marketing assistant, maybe it's the receptionist and your paralegal who helps with it, or your legal secretary. It might just be your receptionist, depending on how small you are. But you want to get the appropriate people gathering the data, and then you want to review it once a month. If you have somebody else there that you can review it with and discuss it with, so much the better, be it your marketing person or your legal secretary who might be acting partly as a marketing person, or perhaps it's your partners. Reviewing this information once a month will give you the awareness of early trends that are developing, and it gives you a lot of control, because truly, to repeat the cliche, you can't manage what you can't measure. And this is going to put metrics to your marketing, and it will allow you to make a much greater impact with your efforts.
So, Shauna, are you saying these are the assignments that you
Yes.
want people to do? So one of the things we want you to do, so you might capture this, especially if you're going after this asset, remember that in the Rainmakers program, you can work on any asset. that you want to. No one is dictating. We can guide and direct you. But if you haven't captured this one, this is how you capture it. Start by printing out this form. Make sure that you've educated your receptionist and your marketing assistant and other attorneys on how to use it, and then reinforce the importance of it by making sure once a month you sit down with your team and review the numbers. What this is going to reveal, first off, is where we are not tracking, because you're going to see it's going to take a little while to get this in place that people actually do track. And then you want to look at what the stats mean and how we can improve on them and how we can innovate. So if we notice that we have a certain percentage of client conversion from interviews, from consultations, we can work on the consultation. If we notice we're getting a certain percentage of inquiries to conversions to consultations or clients, we can work on the intake or screening conversation. So it gives us a lot of things we can work on. And I think Sean's recommending that if you don't have this on the computer, and most people don't, we recommend a paper version first, because it's really, people are not very good at doing the electronic tracking. And we highly recommend a paper version first. And then, as Sean has said, schedule a marketing meeting with your team and review these things once a month. Show them that it's important to you. Demonstrate your team. And if you have a marketing assistant, give it to the marketing assistant as part of their job responsibility. And that I actually would bonus them. If we do a marketing review of our track systems every month, I might bonus them $25 every time we do it, just to reinforce it and just to make sure that it happens. So keeping track of these numbers will allow you to make intelligent marketing decisions. And when a negative trend begins, it's going to be able to allow you to react quickly, and you'll be able to be way ahead of your competition on that. So what I'd like to do is why don't we open this up and see if there's a question. Some of you have jumped in, and which is great, and that's exactly what we want to do. Does anyone have a question?
I have a question. My attorneys are going out doing their marketing and everything, and what I find is that some doctors are turning into good referral sources and some aren't. Is there like a threshold that you can that you should have for doctors to like have repeat lunches with, or should you also constantly be doing like new people each time you go out to lunch with?
Well, let me share if I'm hearing the question, is that the attorneys are going out and they're particularly focusing on the medical community and doctors right now. And of those, there's some that turn out to be decent referral sources and some that don't turn out to be decent referral sources.
Correct.
Is the question, should we focus our efforts on those that are being good referral sources and let the others go and look for new ones on top of that, or should we focus on everyone?
That is the question, because they're doing their marketing, but if someone hasn't sent us a referral in such a period of time, should we just like not go out to lunch with them or dinner anymore?
Yeah.
I would take this on an individual basis, because some are in better positions to send you business than others, and you'll have to check in with your individual attorneys to see what kind of a rapport they feel they have with the doctor. Definitely look at the results that each doctor is producing, but I would take each one on an individual basis.
The answer is you double your efforts and you market to both, and you work harder on the ones that haven't sent. For example, here in my firm, the office has a lot of contacts over the years, and we have a marketing person who was out trying to do it and it wasn't working, where he said, look, we're not seeing any business. I said, give me your top five people who are referring to you that aren't now. I took him and those two doctors, the first group of two doctors out yesterday. They already referred me three cases today. So the answer is you don't stop. If what you have is the people who you've already got a contact with, it just makes it easier to stay in touch. If they're not sending stuff, somebody needs to be out there more often, as opposed to locating new business, which is always ongoing. But, you know, I schedule, right now I've got four lunches per week scheduled through April, and what I do is when I go out for lunch with one doctor, I stop at the other facilities and bring them coffee and meet with the other people and just pop in, and then I round that out so that the next time the guy I had lunch with, I'm dropping coffee off, or even when I'm going someplace else, so that you're never marketing one source and one only, you're constantly marketing multiple sources.
And in addition to that, to the doctors themselves, you can bet that he's building relationship with the staff themselves, because you're going to get referrals and reinforcement of those referrals from the staff when he drops off that coffee.
It's usually the office manager, not the doctor, that controls the flow of the referrals from most doctors' offices. You're very rarely going to get to the surgeon if you're marketing that level of doctor, but, you know, if it's a chiropractor, primary care, office managers, even the receptionist, they have a vested interest. They're the ones that are controlling the flow of business. So I just make it a point, like if I'm taking a doc, I'll give you an example. When I take a doctor out for lunch, I bring in lunch for his staff, because I know they're usually, I know I would be offended if someone came in and took out other people in my office and didn't do something for me. So yesterday when we went out for lunch with the doctors, I sent pizzas to both of the offices for all the staff, so that, you know, I may be marketing face-to-face with a doctor, but the staff's trying to send me business because, you know, they love me for doing things for them.
Okay, so wonderful. So I have another question. I'm sorry. So does that mean that you always go to pick up your doctors? Because I normally, like, my guys meet the doctor, so do you only go to pick them up?
I don't pick them up. I just find it's important to be in their house, so to speak. I think it's very important to show up there, to take a look, say hi to everybody there. If I meet a doctor at a restaurant, it's only someone I've done a lot of business with, and then I'll just stop in and see the people in the front office at another time on a pop-in visit, which is what I call them. But, you know, I always like to show up at the office and personally leave some cards, brochures, shake the hands, thank the people who work there, just so they can see my face, and then go drive. I'll take the doctor out and bring him back. Then he's in my car under my control.
I take that. Thank you.
The message, and by the way, again, this is for everyone on the call, is that the referrals that aren't sending us business right now, there's two things. Number one, they never leave our top of mind awareness, in the sense that they're in our database, they're getting our newsletter, they're getting notes. We've got some follow-up on a regular basis with them where possible, so no one ever leaves that. But when we're not getting referrals from a particular group of referral sources, that's when we pull in the interview. And we may sit down with them for lunch and start asking them questions. What are their frustrations when they send referrals out to people? And if I've got a deep enough rapport, Juliet, and I might even ask them, you know, what stopped them from sending referrals to us? And often if you can develop some intimacy there or some rapport there, you'll be surprised, and they can tell you. Sometimes they just have just got off track with it, and they needed someone to remind them and ask them.
I'm sorry, who
jumped in there?
That was Jim. I just had a question about the form. I found I find a little confusing. We've been mostly talking about where it says, you know, date, potential clients, name, all that, and all that makes sense. But the part above there is, why would you? This form doesn't allow you to add up your marketing activities. So why does it say the total number of marketing activities?
You just capture that from the calendar. Just look at the calendar and just see what.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or
okay.
You can use your, Jim, you can use your mini marketing plan.
Right.
The mini marketing plan should be able to tell us. That's why, and I don't want you collecting this information. I want your marketing assistant collecting it, so we have something to report on every month.
She's sitting here right here with you. Believe me. The other thing is, this form doesn't capture, but I know you said we can tailor it, but for those of us who are doing better with search engine marketing and we're getting inquiries from our website.
Definitely put that on there. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm not doing a great job of tracking all of those, too, and that should get similarly the kind of attention.
Absolutely. Definitely put that on there, because you may be putting significant amounts of money and time and effort into your website, so definitely capture what level of inquiry you're getting, the quality, you know, and how many of those are actually converting to be clients.
There's an interesting caveat for everybody on your internet, is that sometimes what happens with your internet is become a brochure for a lot of people, so they may have got a referral to you, and they've gone to the website to verify it and verify who you are, so they make the inquiry. So even when you get it from the internet, once they come in and we talk to them, we want to still ask the questions, who can we thank, or how did you hear about us, because there's usually often there's a referral or something else going on before they got to the Internet. And they use the Internet to do the final inquiry, which is great. We just like to know where the business is still coming
right,
from.
Right, right. Actually, I can't say we've been tracking it religiously, but the much higher percentage for us of those Internet-based inquiries are from people who just plugged into their Google New York environmental attorney or New York environmental lawyer. And,
I'm telling you, we have no idea how much this Internet is going to, these intimate inquiries and being on the Internet is going to be, how valuable it's going to be to us over time, because
yep.
I'm seeing guys that out of nowhere, we had a matrimonial attorney, out of nowhere, his whole business is filled. He's an international divorce attorney, and he's just totally filled from Internet inquiries alone. And it's just amazing, and you can't tell where it's going to take off sometimes.
Right.
I'm curious as to what is the best way to get this tracking form taken care of. I'm the assistant, but, you know, how am I supposed to go about doing this?
One of the things, I would first make sure we did a briefing with everybody on our team that is the first line of defense in getting inquiries. And then, for example, the front desk is often the first line of defense. But also the attorney should have one at his desk. And anyone that would take the initial calls would have one. And then they're collected either on a weekly, in some cases daily basis, and the stats are put together. And you would make sure the stats are collected and put together on a monthly basis and say, let's review these. Often the attorney won't want to do it or isn't interested, and it's our job to sort of put it up in front of them. Sometimes we see with that with bookkeeping. They don't want to see the numbers, but we want a dashboard in front of them every single, at a minimum, every month. So that's how I would use it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of what I thought, but I wanted to hear it. So
good.
That's great. Thank you.
Okay, gang, we're at the end of our time, and we've run you over a little bit on this. So we're going to go ahead and complete. Great job on this call. John, Sean, great job to you. And we will talk to you all on the next coaching call. Bye, everyone.
Thanks to all of you. Bye-bye.